From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. A judge rejected a request by the State Department of Law to stop signature gathering for an initiative to overhaul the state's election laws. Anchorage Superior Court Judge Yvonne Lamoureux ruled that the state hasn't shown it would likely win an appeal of an earlier ruling. She ruled on Monday that the signature gathering can start. The initiative would require groups working to influence candidate elections to publicly disclose their donors. It also would change the state's primary system and allow voters to rank the candidates in the general election. The Attorney General's office plans to file an appeal of Lamoureux's ruling on the initiative soon, according to a Department of Law spokesperson. The Alaska Marine Highway System confirms that its bare-bone winter schedule just got even leaner. Four southeast communities have been cut off with virtually no notice, stranding passengers and vehicles. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, state officials blame the mounting cost of repairs needed for one of its workhorse vehicles.
The Alaska Marine Highway's Lecante has been taken out of service. State officials say wasted steel in the 46-year-old vessel could cost $2.8 million more than it had budgeted for. It's poor timing. Its sister ship, Aurora, is due to be brought into Ketchikan Shipyard on Monday, leaving few options to pick up the slack. Ferry spokesman Sam Dapsevich says connections in the northern panhandle are effectively severed or reduced.
Service to Angoon, Tanaki, Pelican, and Gustavus will be stopped. And then there will be reduced service. Haines and Skagway are going to receive service once per week, and Hoonah will receive service twice per month.
It's not clear how long the gaps will be. Repair estimates for the Aurora aren't expected until November 15th. At that point, the state says it'll investigate repairing one of the two ferries, but not both. In the meantime, travelers are effectively stranded with no notice.
We have been changed six times since last May.
Gustavus resident Bruce Tedston didn't need caller ID when the Marine Highway's reservation line called on Thursday.
Which is like getting a call that a relative died, because I've gotten so many of them this summer. I just know what it is when it rings and I see that number up there.
He's speaking via cell phone in Nevada. He and his wife can fly home to Gustavus, but their Chevy truck can't.
Our vehicle could be potentially laid up in Juneau for at least 6 months because they're going to be doing some dock work in March, April, and May.
That means there are no ferries to or from Gustavus for the foreseeable. The couple's situation isn't unique. Residents of Angoon, Tanaki Springs, and Pelican are also now stranded, though state officials didn't immediately say how many. The state does have two brand-new Alaska-class ferries it built for $120 million in Ketchikan. Neither are currently on the schedule because they're due to have side doors added this winter. But even if the new boats were ready, ferry spokesman Dapsevich says they couldn't substitute for the Aurora or Lecante anytime soon.
It can't tie up in Tanaki. I believe it also can't tie up in Angoon at this time due to an issue with the dock there. It is able to tie up in Gustavus. I was told it's not able to get into Pelican. But right now, we're still trying to get some answers on if the Taslina would be available to fill in.
That leaves few alternatives. The fast ferry Fairweather has been stripped of its fixtures as the state preps it for sale, and the larger mainliners also can't tie up to the smaller docks. Flying often is not an option, especially in winter. Angoon, Tanaki Springs, and Pelican are only accessible by float plane, and none of these southeast communities have barge service. That means the cost of freighting in groceries is expected to skyrocket, as food will have to be flown in. State lawmakers from across Alaska will take notice of the disruption to service. They'll have to. An email to legislators that went out Friday says sailings to the capital Juneau for the January legislative session will be weekly. The email asks legislators to kindly drop their vehicles off at a secure location in Haines 2 weeks in advance. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Yet another car wreck at the intersection near Juneau's Fred Meyer temporarily shut down the city's main transportation artery on Wednesday evening. The Juneau Police Department reports it was a two-car T-bone collision with multiple injuries. Three people were hospitalized. Both cars were totaled. In related news today, the State Department of Transportation announced an upcoming open house about potential improvements to the accident-prone intersection. It's scheduled for 4 to 7 p.m. November 19th in the community room at the Nugget Mall. Transportation spokesperson Sam Dapsevich says the timing is just coincidental. The department previously held an open house and has taken public comment on redesign concepts. Dapsevich says more information and project documents about the redesign work from the last 2 years is forthcoming on the department's website. Researchers are looking for ways that crab and fish in Alaska may be able to adapt to more acidic ocean water. With carbon dioxide levels rising on the planet, ocean water absorbs some of that CO2, and water becomes acidic. That change is already impacting a variety of sea creatures. Members of the Alaska Ocean Acidification Network gave an update to Alaska's Board of Fisheries and a public presentation on the topic in Anchorage last month. The network is a group of researchers, managers, and stakeholders interested in the looming problem. Robert Foy is director of NOAA Fisheries, Alaska Fisheries Science Center.
It's not that there hasn't been variability in the amount of carbon dioxide. It's not that this hasn't happened before. It's the speed at which it is happening during our lifetime. And whether or not the animals and plants in the ocean are able to adapt fast enough, given the speed at which it's occurring.
Foy outlined recent research from a variety of sources on the impacts of the ocean change on crab and fish. Researchers are testing different sea creatures in the acidic water expected over the next 30 to 50 years. Scientists have seen impacts on shell building, growth, reproduction, and survival on some types of shellfish. He said acidic water has shown an impact on survival of king and tanner crab, but not all of them.
So what we found with tanner crab is that it appears that those tanner crab that did survive in year two survived in year three as well. They acclimated. So it could be that their genetic response, the response of those particular individuals, allowed them to survive in this environment. So what it means is there's going to be winners and losers in the long run. And what it also means is that we have an opportunity that if we appropriately manage these species, then we may be able to sustain them through these stressors that we're expecting to see.
Foy told the Board of Fish that initial results show that the state may see a 50% decrease in catch and profits in tanner crab within the next 20 years. Other studies show a changing ocean will have an impact on behavior, growth, and predator avoidance for some salmon species. Toby Schwer with the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research explained that the hope was to manage fisheries for a tipping point when conditions change dramatically in the Gulf of Alaska. Schwerer pointed to a change in ocean temperatures in the Gulf in the late 1970s.
You know, it's a mixed bag. Some species are going to increase, some species are going to slowly decrease, some species are going to rapidly collapse. And I think it's important to keep those, especially harvestable or commercial species, if those are the ones who are going to collapse rapidly, those are the ones we're going to keep a closer eye on.
Other past research has highlighted that fishing communities in Southwest and Southeast Alaska are at the highest risk from a changing ocean. Here in Southeast, that includes Sitka, Wrangell, Petersburg, and Prince of Wales Island, places with economies that rely heavily on commercial and subsistence fisheries. Changing ocean chemistry is occurring at the same time that unusually warm seawater temperatures are also playing a part in fish distribution and survival. A Skagway man was mauled by a brown bear on the Chilkoot Trail this week. It's the second reported bear attack in the Upper Lynn Canal in a month. KHNS's Claire Strempel has more.
Details are still sketchy about what happened on a dark stretch of the Chilkoot Trail on Monday night.
The entirety of the incident occurred within seconds.
National Park Service Ranger Jason Verhaeg says a hiker was about 8 miles from Skagway when he accidentally startled a brown bear in his path.
And this was one of those lightning-fast situations, which also is one of the determining factors where right now it is being currently treated as a defensive encounter because there was, to understanding, no posturing, no jaw-popping, none of that behavior that would indicate a predatory response from the animal.
Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park has not released the name of the hiker. The man reportedly carried bear spray, but didn't have time to use it before the bear retreated. Authorities wrote in a report that the local man was able to bind his wounds. He then found his way to a ranger's cabin, about a mile from the encounter. He used the cabin's solar-powered radio to call for help at around 2 a.m. At dawn, a chartered helicopter flew rangers and medics from Skagway Fire Department to the cabin. They arrived at 9 a.m. and were able to transport the wounded hiker to Dahl Memorial Clinic in Skagway. That's the extent of the information authorities are releasing about the attack.
Currently, we understand it was the lower right leg that was bitten. Can't share any of the specific injuries sustained.
Verhaeg says the National Park Service and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will post bear warning signs at the trailhead. Rangers don't patrol the Chilkoot Trail in the winter. The Park Service advises hikers and campers to carry bear spray, secure their food, and, when possible, travel in groups. That and make some noise when hiking to avoid startling bears. Verhaeghe says this bear encounter could have ended very badly.
Clearly, the outdoor wilderness knowledge of this individual may very well have played a part in keeping this person alive today.
The incident remains under investigation by the Park Service and Fish and Game. But at this time, there are no plans to pursue the brown bear suspected in the attack. Earlier this month, a pair of local hunters in Haines encountered an aggressive brown bear along the Chilkat River. One of the men sustained serious injuries. Reporting in Haines, I'm Claire Strimple.
Alaska law enforcement agencies have a new group of drug detection dogs on the job. A class of six canines and their handlers graduated a six-week training course last month in Fairbanks. The group included three trooper dogs and their handlers, plus canine and officer teams from municipal police departments in Fairbanks, Cordova, and the North Slope. Trooper spokesperson Ken Marsh says the dogs, which included five Belgian Malinois and one Labrador Retriever, underwent specialized scent training.
Specifically seek out heroin, methamphetamine, and cocaine.
Marsh says one of the new trooper dogs had an eventful first deployment in Fairbanks.
Lennox, who is named after fallen state trooper Gabe Lennox Rich, proved his worth by going out and finding a large amount of methamphetamine and heroin in a narcotics seizure.
Marsh says Belgian Malinois, like Lennox, typically come from specialized breeders in Europe and can cost as much as $13,000 plus training costs. The narcotics dog's next training phase is Patrol Dog Academy, which includes tracking, apprehension, and handler protection. And finally, Juneau's popular Gold Creek Flume Trail is now open. Alaska Electric Light and Power closed the trail in April. The flume provides hydroelectric power by diverting water from Gold Creek to a powerhouse. But the 100-year-old structure had leaks, and portions of the wooden walkway above it needed to be replaced. It was supposed to reopen in early October. However, heavy rain caused landslides that damaged it, extending the repairs. And here's a look at the Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island National Weather Service forecast. Tonight, rain likely, lows in the mid-40s. Saturday, rain likely, highs around 50. Sunday, chance of rain, highs in the mid-40s. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, November 1st, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.